with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We are back. Hour three, kind of rifling through this Monday, not surprisingly, after a Triple Crown stop in Baltimore. We previewed it leading up with Jay Pribman on Friday, and Jay Pribman doped this race out as well or better than anybody. Told you what to expect up front. And that in terms of the, you know, the logical pace scenario contenders, Midnight Bourbon and Medina Spirit, and that the right horse to look at to come at them late was Ron Bauer. Jay, ka-ching!
Yes, thanks, Steve. Yeah, it was a very profitable race. So, yeah, it was nice to have it play out that way.
Well, and to, I can even, in my mind's eye, I just saw who I'm thinking of when they say it, Zero Mostel in the front. It's nice when nice happens to someone nice, and clearly that's part of the story here with Michael McCarthy, the Fradkins, and Flavian Pratt.
No, it was a terrific win for Michael. Known him a long time back when he was an assistant for Doug Peterson and Ben Cecil, and then obviously his profile was increased when he went to work for Todd Pletcher for 11 years, and he's done great since going out on his own with, you know, City of Light, CC Speech, horses of that caliber, and Illuminant, but this was certainly the highlight of his career, and it was a terrific win. And, you know, he's a terrific trainer, and the horse was well prepared for the race, and I thought he had run a deceptively good race in the Bluegrass with no pace, and he certainly got a better pace scenario Saturday and took advantage of it.
Very much got a perfect ride too, and I thought the way you very quickly summarized the race. I saw the tweet afterward, trained to the minute by McCarthy and ridden, you know, just perfectly, in terms of judging the pace and, you know, not leaving Ron Bauer with too much to do. And on the front end, of course, the two principals, they were going faster than, certainly the Medina Spirit needed to go for Derby, and, left them vulnerable later on.
Very much. I mean, Midnight Bourbon, won the battle but lost the war. They didn't want to let Medina Spirit get the same kind of fractions that he was able to get away with in the Derby. And, coming back on 2 weeks was certainly, I think, a factor for Medina Spirit just because of how he is physically. I mean, he's not as big a horse as Midnight Bourbon. I think Midnight Bourbon can take that kind of a turnaround a little bit better. But look, the race, they both did what they needed to do. Medina Spirit, from where he was drawn, he had to go. And obviously the intent with Midnight Bourbon in the Derby was to be closer than he was. And that was why he was my top choice in the Preakness. I just thought he had a deceptively tough trip in the Derby and thought he would run better in this spot. I thought the price on him was an underlay based on what his chances should have been. I was surprised he got hammered down as much as he did, but he seemed over the course of the week leading up to the race to have become a pretty popular choice. And Rumbauer, like you mentioned, he got a great ride from Pratt, but that's something we've come to expect out here in California. He's just head and shoulders above everybody out here, and it's nice to see him getting kind of national recognition now because I think he's as good as anybody in the country. I'd take him if I was doing a draft for riders to use on a horse. To me, he doesn't take a backseat to anybody you could name.
And that element, you know, both on the trainer jockey side, with you know, two individuals that, you know, that are in the shadow of you know, bigger names, but you know, when it comes to McCarthy in particular, you know, he's amassing you know, quite the Chris Carter like record. He's got more grade ones than anything else.
No, he does a great job. I mean, he's got a strong barn. Even I remember going into the Breeders' Cup last year. He had approximately 45 head at the time, and you know, four of his runners were in Breeders' Cup races last year. One of them was Rumbauer, and I ended up writing a feature story on him prior to the Breeders' Cup last year, just sort of pointing out how nearly 10% of his barn was going to be competing in the Breeders' Cup. But also just giving some background on him, because I just thought he kind of deserved a little bit higher profile. You know, he's been around a long time, and I don't know that people really knew his whole background. And he certainly had a great education in terms of his horsemanship before he went out on his own, and he's just gone from strength to strength.
Back to the race for a little bit, too. It is, you know, was, I think, I'm sure, you know, for bettors anyway, nice to, you know, because I also, like you, I picked Midnight Bourbon in Derby as well, and, you know, wanted to see him involved. So, you know, as you know, Steve Asmussen, I think, you know, as much as he would have liked to have won, he said, he, you know, he ran his race. We did what we came to do and got beat. And the same could be said of, you know, of Medina Spirit, who ran credibly again.
No, Medina Spirit ran a courageous race. He had to go faster earlier for the first six furlongs than he did in the Derby, coming back in 2 weeks and hounded by a, you know, big, strong horse. And he just, you know, he ran well. He just was third best on the day, the way the race came up. You know, and Midnight Bourbon, like I said earlier, he won the battle but lost the war. He beat the horse that they thought they had to beat by two lengths, but unfortunately for their purposes, Rombauer reeled both of them in. So it was, it was good performances from the top three, and look forward to seeing where they all end up next.
Now, we'll talk about that in a couple of minutes. Kind of walk through the chart a little bit. Jay brought up with Rich, brought up the two Chad runners, and you were, you know, in addition to being right about the top end of the chart, you were also right about, you know, about the approach to the Wood exiters.
Yeah, I mean, and that was one of the other reasons I was keenly interested in gambling on the race, was, you know, hoping that opinion was correct. I had taken a position that the Wood was a negative key race and played the Derby that way. Had no use for the horses from the Wood that were in the Derby, and took a similar approach to the runners in the Preakness. And I think anybody who followed racing at Aqueduct during the winter and was paying attention and reading Andy Serling's daily updates on the way the track was playing and listening to, you know, Andy's insight on Talking Horses, understood that it was hard to make an excuse for risk-taking's performance in the Wood. He did get hit by a dirt clod, and that certainly had to impact him a little bit, but he had run well twice previously over that track, and it was hard for me to just make an excuse for him completely in the Wood. And Crowded Trade, I thought, had run an okay race in the Wood. But even Chad Brown had said beforehand he was concerned about the horse's ability to handle the distance. But the overriding thing for me was just I thought the Wood was a bad race. And you know, sometimes if you are right in that regard, you can not, and you're right, you know, you can eliminate horses from your gimmicks just as much as there's others that you're embracing to put into your gimmicks, and that it helps not only in terms of ticket construction, but in terms of ticket costs. And, you know, if you're right, you get rewarded. And fortunately, in this specific instance, it worked out.
Pause for a second, Jay, because you made me think about, and I brought this up in the opening salvos about the weekend and about the race. The betting was surprising to me. Did it surprise you the way the Preakness board was early on established on Friday and dragged well into Saturday?
You mean regarding Midnight Bourbon's price?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I said that earlier. I mean, I was surprised. I thought he was an underlay. He just obviously became a popular pick over the fortnight. I mean, there were a number of people in the racing form, myself included, who made him their top pick in the race. I think based on the same kind of theories that everybody sort of had the same theory who liked him, that he didn't get his best chance in the Derby, and he figured to be in a much more prominent position in the Preakness and hopefully could take advantage of that. But I did think his price was about a point lower than it should have been. And that was what had me back off making a win bet on him. But, you know, fortunately, the gimmicks all worked out.
It was also, shocking, frankly. Ram was, 12, 13, 14 to 1, eventually floated to 16 to 1. That was, it just seems these days, for whatever reason, Jay, in the Triple Crown races, I mean, there's the board no longer ever reflects the reality chances of some of the some of the long shots.
Yeah, that was a strange one. I mean, I guess there's just a lot of LA Rams fans out there who gambled on him. I don't know, but for him to only be 4 points higher than Rumbauer, who to me that was a very stark line of demarcation between a horse who could be in the gimmicks if not outright win the race and a horse who was a toss. For the difference in those two to be 4 points was startling to me.
Yeah, the concentration of the chart from top to bottom.
Yeah, the highest price was 24 to 1.
Yeah, France. It's funny.
Ram was the second highest price at just shy of 16.
Yeah.
So, like you said, I mean, there was just a compaction of the numbers there. It's like, I guess everybody, I don't know, people are betting these races like it's Little League. Everybody can get a participation trophy.
Yeah. France Godina ended up as the longest of those prices, 24 to 1. And that probing move that Rosario made, which, was reminiscent of what Swiss Skydiver did last October, that shouldn't go unrecognized as contributing to the prompting of that pace midway through the race.
Right. Yeah. He definitely tried to make that move there and go up and engage them. It was kind of a short-lived bid. Unlike Swiss Skydiver last year, who went on with it, he backed out of there pretty quickly after maybe about an eighth of a mile of that bid. But that certainly contributed to your point of the third and fourth quarters of the race were pretty quick. Especially the fourth quarter was run in less than 24 seconds. And that's a pace that really, I think, knocked out helped contribute to the top two being a little bit weakened when Rumbauer came to get him, because he went by him without a whole lot of resistance. I think that those middle fractions really took their toll on those horses. It was a pretty strong middle part of the race. The second quarter was run in 23.16. The third quarter was run in the shade over 24. And then the fourth quarter was run in less than 24 seconds. It was 23.81. So that was a strong pace in the middle part of the race there.
Yeah, and Pratt, that's where Pratt's portion of this, and of course McCarthy's preparedness of Rombauer, really takes over, because Flavian edged him forward without much without much encouragement, more or less on his own, and then, moved exactly as, as the runners up front were, enervated. And the result was an open length, three and a half length win. And nice for Flavian Pratt to, be able to celebrate after the wire in the fashion that, a rider deserves, as opposed to the classic, his previous classic victory, which came, via, steward decision. So you could tell how much it meant to him and Michael and the Fradkins. This was, Jay, considering our conversation on Friday, this was a, I'm sure it's trite, kind of a just what the doctor ordered result.
No, it was a satisfying result. It was nice to see, the Fradkins, have a very small operation, just a couple of mares, and it's nice that there's still room for people like that to have success at this level, because there's so many partnerships in this game now, and there's so many entities that just buy so many horses to try and flood the zone that it's hard for people like that to end up with success at the top level. And fortunately, this is a homebred that through circumstances they were able to hang on to, and what a great reward on Saturday.
Well, that gets us two-thirds of the way through this through this annual odyssey, and it's back on the the spot in the schedule it needs to be and deserves to be. So we'll continue forward, and it does feel, Jay, after after this result and with the horses that were leaving Churchill after Derby, with the ones that were going to wait, it does feel like we'll get I don't know if we'll get 16, but we'll get a bulky gate, it feels like, in New York.
I would think so. I mean, you're going to have a number of horses who ran in the Derby, skip the Preakness, and are going to run in the Belmont, like Essential Quality and Rock Your World and Hot Rod Charlie, horses like that that are going to go. And there's several Pletcher horses like Bourbonic and Known Agenda, who ran in the Derby and skipped the Preakness and are planning on running in the Belmont. And obviously there's going to be keen interest in whether or not Pletcher and the Shadwell group decide to go on with the Philly Malathat into the Belmont off her Oaks win. I mean, that would certainly take the interest in the race to a whole nother level if she runs and you get the Preakness winner and the Derby favorite all in the same gate. That's a pretty good start, and I think you're going to end up with probably a dozen or so by the time it's all said and done. That would make for a really fun race.
Well, that's what it feels like, and the drama around Malathat will go a long way. And Todd Pletcher's got a hatful of potential runners in here, and then of course there's the horse Rebel's Romance coming, from Dubai, and as you mentioned, the Derby exiters so we'll see about Midnight Bourbon. He's going back to Churchill, but we're gonna have a nice gate, it feels like. Jay, what else caught your interest from the weekend?
That was pretty much all in on Preakness related stuff, and just sort of, other than that, it seemed like it was Mike Maker's weekend. He had a sensational weekend back there, winning a number of stakes races, and so it was kind of, I think the spotlight was on him otherwise. So those were sort of the takeaways for me.
No, very much. And we just talked to Maker. It's funny. I was all in on the Friday winners, and then Saturday I wasn't able to glom onto those. One thing, Jay, that does seemingly bother everybody that is so frustrating. The racetrack, and I understand, you know, there's going to be days where, you know, you get weather scenarios that, you know, the track gets sealed and then it gets unsealed and it, you know, it's got some bias to it. But boy, it, you know, after Friday, you think to yourself, well, they'll work on that track and hopefully even it out. And you know, I guess it was a little better Saturday than it was Friday. But boy, I mean, you had a bit of a highway on the inside on Friday. And, you know, it kind of plays with your head, you know, when you're, you know, watching and trying to adjust.
Yeah, no, you just need to adjust to those things. I mean, I did think the inside was much better Friday than Saturday. You know, it seemed early on Saturday it was good, but, you know, there were also good horses that were down on the inside too. So it seemed to be less of a factor, I thought, as the day wore on. But it was certainly, it appeared to be an advantage, a much more significant advantage on Friday.
Well, and you know, there's been that dialogue where people say, "Oh, why, you know, why did they you know set the track up that way?" And I don't think that there's any, you know, there's any thinking that necessarily, you know, goes into it that, oh, let's make the track you know, set it up for track records. I mean, that's something you hear people say, but it, you know, it's not. I don't think it's ever done by design per se. So you gotta be agile. You gotta be on your toes. I'll tell you one thing, Rahm Bauer was on. For those that were watching, Rahm Bauer, if you got to see much of the post parade and so forth, you know, from the grass and then when they went postward, he was touting himself on Saturday. That's for sure.
No, he was definitely on his toes, and I think, you know, Flavian Pratt gave a nice shout out to the woman who was on the pony that took him to the post and said, you know, really helped get him calmed down in the post parade and settled. Once he got onto the track and got with the pony, he was a lot better, but he was certainly much more rambunctious in that outdoor saddling area. And there, you know, every year there's always a horse or two that get a little bit agitated over there. You know, it's an unusual situation. I mean, the only other comparable thing like that is when they saddle in the infield for the Arkansas Derby, which obviously Rahm Bauer did run in. But there's really no other situation in racing where horses are saddled out in the open like that, with, and especially with fans around, which is another thing that a lot of these horses haven't dealt with much over the past year. So I think it's a little understandable that it might be one or two that get a little bit more anxious than usual. But like I said, once he got out on the track and got with the pony, he was fine.
Well, yeah, stop in Baltimore, and there's a chance that the Pimlico that we all know and have enjoyed for decades, really. I mean, it was my first Triple Crown events for a number of years, even before I started going to Belmont Stakes. It may not look like it looked on Saturday ever again. You know, there's a real chance that when we get around next spring, that, you know, the redevelopment is underway. So it's might be the last of a Preakness under a certain backdrop, Jay, and look forward to whatever's ahead there. I've always loved going there.
No, it's a great stop. You know, it's I'm glad the race is staying there. It deserves to stay there, and I'm glad there'll be efforts made to improve the facility there, but I'm glad it's staying in that neighborhood. The neighborhood embraces it, and the race has been run there for a long time, and I'm glad it's going to continue to be run there. And it's a fun stop. You've got everybody, or for the most part, in the stakes barn there. It's a much more enjoyable kind of setup. So and it ended up being a good race on Saturday. So
very much, very much, and of course to some degree the atmosphere and the week stretches into today and tomorrow with what's going on at Timonium, and they are underway at the sale. So a lot of horsemen stay in town, and owners and bloodstock people stay in town, you know, the next few days and buy some horses today. Jay, well done. Congratulations on a nice pop, and on to the king.
Yes, exactly. Well, thanks, Steve. Appreciate you having me on.
Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman, and Jay and, of course, Marty, bringing you the Triple Crown season like no one else, like no one else can. We'll stay here. We've got half an hour to close out, and Graham Motion is going to join us. While we look to grab Graham, let's see what went on. See if we've got a result yet. I did not actually watch Blues Philly go through the ring, and it's an RNA'd at 170. So Blue must have set a number, probably 175, if you had to guess, because they always seem to get very close. Maybe more, maybe 200. But either way, the Philly did not sell. So, you know, if Blue doesn't get his number, he'll he'll look ahead and probably get her started and campaign her himself. He's not that's not going to bother. I'm sure he would have loved to have, you know, brought in, you know, a big number, but he'll go on with her, or, you know, maybe take on some partners. We'll find out. I'll let everybody know. They're up. Let's see. They're up to hip nine already. So. I think I just heard a dial tone. Case, was that was that supposed to be Graham hiding back there? No, all right. Well, he'll get Graham in here. Let's see. It was supposed to be Graham on the line. All right, Casey will get him back. Graham Motion's going to join us, and we got a few good things. I haven't talked to Graham too long, as it happens. He is in the car. He's driving from Fairhill to Timonium, and Graham Motion joins us now and comes in off of a win on Friday and a win on Saturday, the Hilltop with Alda, and then the most popular, seemingly the most popular turf mare in the country, Mean Mary. I think it's the name, Graham, that everybody loves. Good morning. Congratulations.
Hey, thank you, Steve. I'm having a little bit of a hard time hearing you.
Maybe Case, can you pop me up for Graham? Is that possible? Maybe. All right. We'll try it. Graham, I'll speak slowly and distinctly if I can. Let's
sounds good.
There we go. Let's start with Friday, and you know, in addition to Alda winning the Hilltop, I was delighted. I was delighted that the price that we got.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if I was a betting man, I guess I would have been too. I was a little surprised, but, you know, she'd been a little off form, although it was kind of all explainable, I guess, between the Breeders' Cup and the sprint comeback at Keeneland.
There was also, you know, a few things, the stretch out, because I didn't think the race in the limestone at Keeneland was bad at all. And, you know, then she's also taking on Lasix for the first time, and I thought there was plenty to like about the setting. She was certainly going to get a pace, it seemed, to chase, and, you know, Johnny had her in great position, you know, pretty quickly.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Johnny's just in such a zone at the moment, and he gave us such a good trip. I was pretty relieved about the trip she'd had when I saw Jimmy Tonis really coming at us at the eighth hole, and just glad that she'd, not that I wish ill on anybody, but I was kind of relieved that she'd had the stumble coming out of the gate, because she was definitely flying at the end.
Well, and the chart, they called the chart by a neck, and there was another nose back to arm candy as well, the Asmussen Peter Bradley filly. But you know, talk about this Wertheimer and Frere homebred and her progress.
Yeah, I mean, she was the most precocious two-year-old I had last year. I think she was probably our first two-year-old winner. Johnny rode her once at Belmont. She was a little unlucky first time, came back and won next time. And really hasn't done much wrong. I mean, she was a little flat in the Breeders' Cup. I wasn't sure about what's going to be her best distance. My suspicion is she doesn't want to go much further than a mile. And that's why I started her back in a sprint race. But clearly she gets the two turns. It's just a question of how much further she's going to want to go. I love the stallion. I mean, Munnings is just going to be one of the hottest stallions in the country.
She... You know, she started out turf sprinting, and, you know, when you took her up to Woodbine and off the Catch a Glimpse, and you went back for the Natalma, and, you know, she ran into Lady Shakespeare there. I mean, she, you know, other than, you know, what went on in the Breeders' Cup, I mean, she's never really run a bad race. I wouldn't even count the Limestone against her.
No, I agree. I think that's a very fair comment.
How do you go forward from here? And you know, what's her distance limitations or parameters, you know, based on what you saw Friday?
Look, I think it's very reasonable to think that the mile is probably somewhere close to her limit. I don't, even though the stamina and the pedigree, I don't think she wants to go much further. It would be great to get a graded win with her. There are so many options for this category, for three-year-olds on the grass, whether it be colts or fillies. It seems like we really have an abundance of opportunities, which I am certainly going to try and take advantage of.
Nice. Well, just when you mention the distance available in the pedigree, and I'm just looking at Soldata, the Maria's Mon mare, and hadn't really looked at siblings, but... this is there was a pivotal gelding that was actually won the Prix de l'Or, as it happens. So there's as an older horse. So actually there might be you know, more with maturity too. You know, how much improvement have you seen from and growth have you seen from 2 to 3?
Yeah, I think that's possible. I mean, you always worry with these precocious two-year-olds how they're going to improve, but she's always been a very straightforward filly. She trained very well for this race. She's a very solid, well-made filly. She's a good eater. She doesn't miss much. So, yeah, I think there's definitely room for improvement.
Well, I don't know if we're going to improve on getting 1740, but it certainly helped. It certainly helped the pick four and pick five on Friday, and so
it might be a sign of how badly I was doing before Friday.
Well, that's all right. We don't have to get into that. you know, your time of year is unfolding, it seems. Let's go to Saturday and talk about Mean Mary. And, you know, coming back for a seasonal debut, knowing where she likes to be, you know, pretty much, you know, attacking the race laid out for you and for her. And, you know, Luis Saez aboard, and she dictated terms, essentially.
Yeah, she really did. I mean, we assumed she was going to be on the lead. I don't think I thought she'd have quite such an easy lead. I don't think that filly has to be on the lead, by the way. I think that it's the nature of her style. She just gallops and can gallop them into the ground, whether it's know, mile 16th, mile and a quarter. So, look, I couldn't have been happier with how things set up. I originally thought I'd go to New York for the New York Handicap, which is the race you won last year, going a mile and a quarter, but this option just seemed to make more sense. It's close to home for us. And I was hoping to get something along the lines of what we got on Saturday. So, she's kind of becoming a favorite, this mare of ours. She's such a character. She's so generous in her races. And just a neat filly to be around. And to have Mr. Campbell there on Saturday was pretty special.
Well, that adds to it. And as you and I have talked about, you know, going back to last year, I was a huge fan of Karlovy Vary and the Dynaformer daughter that Rusty Arnold campaigned. And, you know, here's this Scat Daddy, and she, you know, feels like, you know, looking at this performance and knowing what she did last year in the New York and the Diana, obviously you're working now from Breeders' Cup backwards.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly where I'd like to end up. I'd love to get to the Beverly D. It's a race I've never won before, and I think it'll really suit her. And there's not going to be many more chances to do that. So that's certainly a
right.
race that I would like to kind of circle as well.
Mean Mary, and now 6 for 10 with the two placements. And I'm curious because, you know, you've had some popular horses over the years. You must love all the attention that and the whole barn must love the attention that she gets on social media.
Yeah, she definitely has a bit of a following. I don't know whether it's because of social media or just because she is such a character and such a great story behind her. But I think her running style is exciting to watch. So she definitely does have a good following, and that's a good thing.
Well, I saw I'll capture the picture, or I think I either liked it or retweeted it. Somebody's son put up made a sign and put it on their lawn. congratulations, Mean Mary. Which was really cute. Obviously we'll have plenty of chances to talk about her as the season goes on. Graham, I want to ask you too about, you know, some other things that went on over the weekend. That includes Bye Bye Melvin, who I thought, you know, English B, I kind of was keyed on in the dinner party. And I also thought Bye Bye Melvin had a look. Some thoughts about how that unfolded later in the day.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't beaten very far. I really think this horse wants to go longer distances. I'm going to start looking at the mile and a quarter races for him, much like Mean Mary. I think, you know, he's a lovely big horse. He's a big striding horse. He'll gallop all day. And I think that's probably more what he wants to do. So, running, you know, these shorter distances in the distant future, in the near future.
And how about English B?
Yeah, English B was unlucky. I mean, I really liked both these horses going into the race. I thought English B was having just the best trip until all of a sudden, around the 3/16th pole, I guess, Joel tried to get up the rail and it just closed off in front of him and he was stuck. So that was, you know, a little frustrating, a little disappointing. I felt like he was really going into this race well, and I hate to waste a race with him. I like this horse a lot. He's a hard-knocking, blue-collar, tough horse, but he'll have his day.
Well, you also had a couple of board hits to stay on the. These are horses that didn't necessarily win, but Invincible Gal and Candace O in New York as well. Talked to Rich Migliori a little bit ago about the Clement winner.
We have a fairly deep group of 3-year-old fillies on the yeah. grass, including those two, Mia Martina, who was a little unlucky in the Hilltop with Alda. But I thought both these fillies ran great. Candace O was pretty game. I was surprised how close she ended up to the pace, shortening her up to 7/8. But Kendrick said she loved that. And, you know, this really doesn't run a bad race. We give her plenty of time between races, but I think she puts a lot into it. And Invincible Girl was coming off a break. She was coming off a Breeders' Cup where she really had no chance being drawn in the 14 hole, but trained really well for this. Spent the winter down at Stone Street with Ian Brennan, who did a great job getting her ready. He did most of the preparation, really. I just kind of fine-tuned her the last month or so. So credit to those guys. But I think, you know, we've got four pretty exciting three-year-old fillies this year.
Well, and there's no shortage of opportunities on that front. It'll be busy. I mean, throughout the region, you'll have any number of options.
Yeah, I mean, even the Penn Oaks comes up pretty quickly now. I don't know if I'll make it back with one of them for that, but there are a lot of options for these three-year-old grass horses.
Let me, speaking of grass horses, in addition to the stakes runners, I want to ask you about a maiden winner that turned up this week, going back to Thursday, that people might not have seen. But I don't know how many horses Samson is left campaigning, Graham, but Dance Some Mo, that Uncle Mo out of Dance Again, this is the Samson family, and with them winding down, operation, this might be a last hurrah heading toward the Queen's Plate.
Yeah, wouldn't that be neat to get him to the Queen's Plate? I mean, he seems like a horse that's going to handle the distance. He's a lovely big horse. You know, you put a line through his dirt race, which I never felt he handled the dirt as well as he handled the synthetic in the morning. So everything indicated he would handle grass. He was unlucky at Tampa. You know, Chad ran one of his probably better three-year-olds down there in that maiden race. I mean, the Tampa maiden race is a not to be sneezed at these days. You never know who you're going to run into down there. So he ran well to be second that day, and we took him to Kentucky last time he came off the grass. I was glad to get him back in, and I thought he did it really nicely. I mean, he looked like he was headed at the 16th pole and came back and won pretty comfortably. James was really pleased with him.
Well, it feels like this is a horse that you'll angle toward Queen's Plate. I did not get a chance to give everybody the update. We'll probably do that with Jim Lawson tomorrow or Wednesday, but there finally was a light at the end of the tunnel for Woodbine getting started.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. I mean, we had every intention of having a stable up there this year, but it's just been too complicated, obviously, with everything that's going on. So, you know, maybe it's something we can do next year, but we'll still be running up there plenty, I'm sure, once they get going.
Well, this, much like so many of the Samson families that, you know, we talk about, this goes back to Dance Through the Dawn, and in fact, the dam herself was a stake winner, Dance Again. So fold that in with Uncle Mo, and this is actually a gelding, so there might see that yellow and red for a while, maybe, with this one, Graham. That would be great. The longer we get to see those Samson silks, the better off the game is.
Yeah, I mean, and the Queen's Plate and like the Beverly D, I mean, those are kind of bucket list races you want to be part of and be nice to have on your resume.
Without a doubt. Touch on trying to glance at anything else that we might have missed here. And no, that's pretty much it, it looks like. You do have some maidens that we're going to see this week in New York. Let's at least look at those, Graham. And coming up on Thursday, you've got, and I don't know if the weather, I haven't looked that far ahead, but Lachine, Fortuna, Tonal Verse. Looks like you're prepared for anything on Thursday.
You've got to be prepared for anything, Steve. I can't get off the duck up there. I had a second with another Samson horse on Saturday, Red Storm Risen. So we're knocking on the door. But I thought Lysheen ran really well up there last time. You know, we'd been running her at Tampa over shorter distances. She's an intermischief filly. I felt that stretching her out was something that was going to help her. So, you know, if she can run back to that race, she'll be very competitive. Fortuna probably ran her best race up there last year. We gave her a little freshening. Again, I think this is really what she wants to do. Hopefully she's fit enough. She should be.
And, you know, should weather swing through, Tonal Verse is MTO. You got something. And this is... You know, this is one of those mile and a quarter maiden races that the racing office collects these horses, and when there's enough of them, they get written.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there were more of them, quite honestly, Steve. You really only find them in New York and occasionally in Kentucky. We might get one down at Colonial, but I mean, there are plenty of horses out there that want to go these longer distances, but there are less and less opportunities.
Now this is a big field, and boy, you whenever they do these, you do see some pedigrees, and all you have to do is look at who's involved here. You've got a Dabawi from Chad Brown and Peter Brandt. You've got how about the Summerfront from Clement and Bob Masiello and the Empire Racing Club. Clement's also got a Warfront for Claiborne. This is not exactly, this is not low-hanging fruit.
No doubt.
What, you're at Timonium, you're heading for the sale, and what are your thoughts going into these 2 days?
I mean, I was out yesterday. It's not a sale that I go to every year, but I was pretty impressed with how many people were around. I think the general consensus is it's going to be a very strong sale, as have been the last couple of sales. The Miami sale and the OBS sales have both been, I think, pretty strong. So, look, that's a good thing. It's a good sign for the industry. I think there's reason for optimism.
Well, and the one thing that happens... that happens here, you do have, you know, the added intrigue of, you know, New York breds and Pennsylvania breds, Maryland bred, Maryland sired horses, and the acute Mid-Atlantic flavor, and you know, the fact that it seems like there were a lot of bloodstock people down at Ocala that got turned away, and no less than Gary Young when we were with Gary leading into Derby, and he said he got shut out. He couldn't buy anything at OBS. So there's going to be, I think there's going to be some, you know, some heavy handedness going on. I think it should be a very nice couple of days.
I agree. The weather's beautiful. It's a good time for a sale.
Graham Motion, everybody, and I'm sure Maggie Kimmett already told you that she was one of the winners of the contest 2 weeks ago.
I did not know that. That's terrific. That's well deserved for Maggie.
Well, you tell her she should buy lunch at Michael's later, because she was good for two bills.
I definitely will.
Graham, well done. Congratulations, and we'll see you and talk soon.
Thank you, Steve. Good talking with you again. It's been a while.
Absolutely. Graham Motion, everybody. And a couple of stake wins and a couple of nice board hits in the Soaring Softly. In fact, speaking of the Soaring Softly, we'll have to get, I haven't talked to Christophe Clement, get him on as well this week, right? Yeah. That was a good race. That one was okay. I got to watch and look at that chart. I mean, three noses, basically. So I'll watch that later. All right? We'll catch up. That's one of the things, you know, one of the things that goes on when you make these, you know, you're immersed at, you know, particularly, obviously, a day like weekend, like this past one. You sort of... you know, you miss everything else that was going on. So we'll catch up. We'll get plenty of chance. Only got a couple of minutes here. And I should mention as well that from the weekend, there was the small stake at Santa Anita. We slipped that in, too, because there was a little bit of a story involved here. The Chosen Vron won the Laz Barrera at a short price. But Vronsky died last week. So it caught my eye that, number one, that Chosen Vron was in this race. Umberto Rispoli aboard. And I'll probably bring him up with Sin on Wednesday. Just about 5 minutes. Is Ron with us? No? I thought I heard in the background. I was gonna slip Moquette in, who of course took that turf sprint with Rosario. So maybe we'll save that. If we don't get him today, we'll get him tomorrow. Instead. All right. No problem. I didn't hear. We'll get through the rest of the... Let me do this. We'll get through the rest of the... Okay. No problem, Case. The rest of the action. Saturday, I haven't mentioned because, they started the card with that Sir Barton early on at 10:30. And, in fact, Tina and I were making our way to Pimlico at that hour, right at 10:30. And we got there just after the second was over. And the King Cheek, Jamie Ness, that was a good race with Hozier. And separated by the head. I mentioned Mighty Mischief. I'm sure we'll catch up with Steve Asmussen. Boy, the Highling Brats, how often do you... do you look up in those sprints? They're so tough. That white jacket with the orange star, Ricardo Santana Jr. And see, at that point, what was that? At probably 11:30? Was it 11:30? Quarter to 12? Yeah, quarter to 12. And, given, not that the even money favorite, Jackson Traveler, not that he had to win. He was even money, and Mighty Mischief was 2-1. But you did think to yourself, and also because the King Cheek and Hozier, they were, essentially 1-2 almost all the way around the track. So the day started, and you're thinking to yourself, ugh, we're still dealing with this racetrack, and it seeps into your mindset. You also had the wire winner from Wesley as well, that fire sword with Johnny. So by that time, I had made a mental commitment that you better favor anybody that's up front. TD Dance, I mentioned Brad Cox's weekend and the fact that he had won three stakes, three different venues between Arklow and TD Dance, who took all the money with the scratch of out a door. I thought the race was much wider open than it turned out to be. TD Dance won just sort of in hand. The Can the Man Colt for Mattaket and Wonder, Paul Farr, and Team Hanley. Cox also, in addition to Arklow, that third stake, Inject, who had been cross-entered at Pimlico, but ran at Prairie Meadows instead, won the Goldfinch out there. So three different venues. I told you about Chubb Wagon, who just refuses to lose. And you know, that, by the way, that was another race. That was in the ski pet. And that was another race where it I don't know, it seemed to me, even though Chubwagon didn't win on the lead, which is, you know, kind of where you were looking for her, but, you know, Rad Ortiz, I mean, rode her with tremendous confidence. She's a story. We'll have to talk to see with Tony. She's a Parks-based, of course, with Lupe Preciado, and what a neat story she is. 6 for 6. Daniel Lopez and George Chestnut, and homebred, Pennsylvania bred. Casual was trying to come from off the pace and ran well for John Sakura and the Hill and Dale partners involved. She ran a good race, but there was no getting to that point. Chubwagon was gone. Mentioned Fire Crow. We'll save that conversation for Moquette. You heard about the two maker winners back to back, both days, right? That's it. I'll save the rest. And as you can hear, I'm yeah. Tina and I got back yesterday afternoon, and I was asleep by like 7:30. I could not keep my eyes open. So we may we may need a second one of those, right? All right. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9, and we'll do more recapping tomorrow, including with Andy Serling and some more winners. Thanks to Michael W. McCarthy. Congratulations to him and first classic victory. Rich Migliori, Mike Maker, Jay Pribman, Graham Motion. Watch for the sale. We'll do some of that tomorrow as well and join you at 9. Good luck if you're playing today, everybody. A few options out there, including Indiana. We'll talk to Bill Downs on Wednesday as it happens. I saw, I got a picture together with Chris Griffin. Met him for the first time face to face. He's loving Philly. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you in the morning.
With Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.